This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Sex trafficking continues to be a problem in Cincinnati, with the West McMicken, Price Hill, and Walnut Hills areas experiencing the most prostitution activity. Councilmember Yvette Simpson has led City Council's push for legislation and has been working with the Cincinnati Police and other city departments to reduce sex trafficking. And joining us to discuss efforts to reduce prostitution in Cincinnati are Councilmember Yvette Simpson, Cincinnati Union Bethel Executive Vice President and Off the Streets Program Director Mary Carol Melton, and Cincinnati Police Specialist Nate Young, who was instrumental in the McMicken People Against Trafficking Humans Project. You can be part of the discussion at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Yvette, Mary Carol, Nate, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
How big of a problem is this in Cincinnati, Mary Carol? You want Nate to start us off? Or?
Well, I would say that there is a large enough problem that is indicated by the two wonderful people who are here today, and the fact that I know we're going to talk more about the Off the Streets program that has been going on for 10 years and serving over 800 women. I would say there is a huge problem.
Absolutely, I agree.
Yeah, the law enforcement perspective is when you're allocating resources, money, manpower, equipment to a specific problem in a specific area, that's a good indicator of how the problem is viewed by the community, and thus the response of the law enforcement will reciprocate that. So when you're prostitution is a lot of times viewed as a victimless crime, and it's a solitary entity. There's not a whole lot of arms that come off of that. I would respectfully and professionally disagree. Anything from unsolved murders, what we currently have an unsolved murder of a prostitute that occurred on McMicken, down to simple things as littering and other type of violations within the areas that prostitution occurs.
Yes, there's also tied other things. Direct trafficking, I think, is a big one, isn't it, Nate?
Absolutely. I would, and again, my professional opinion, there's three things that need to exist in order for prostitution, street prostitution, to take root in an area, and that would be unoccupied structures for the prostitutes to sleep in, do some of their drug abuse in, and some of their sex trafficking in, as well as ability to walk to a drug trafficker and buy their drugs. And then, again, an area in which to do the drugs, which sometimes can be, again, an unoccupied building or a willing participant in drug abuse that has an apartment or something they can use. So those three things need to exist in an area. And the drug trafficking comes violence between the drug traffickers and competing for territory, along with drive-offs of a purchase of drugs and then shots fired and things of that nature. So there's a lot of things that come with this simple, victimless crime of prostitution that at just a real quick surface glance you don't see, but once you start peeling back the layers, it certainly does precipitate a great number of crimes that should concern all citizens that live in, around or unfortunately participate in prostitution.
And as far as you're concerned, it's not a victimless crime.
Well, absolutely not. The prostitute themselves, sometimes by their own accord and sometimes at the hand of others, is a victim. And then if you think about the family members that are trying to rescue their loved one from this prostitution occupation, they're involved and they're victims, as well as the children of the prostitutes. Most of the children have most of the prostitutes have children, and certainly they have parents and siblings that care for them and other loved ones that, are shouldering the biggest burden of guilt and financial burden to try to rescue them and get them into rehabilitation facilities and so forth and so on.
Nate, what typically happens when a woman's arrested for soliciting? What happens when a man engaging a prostitute is arrested? Does this typically you end up in court and you face jail time?
Yeah, well, it's really a two-part answer. In the past, if a prostitute was arrested, sometimes they weren't even taken to jail. Sometimes they would receive a citation and given a court date, which then facilitated this whole path of not appearing in court and capiases and being recited over a couple dozen times over the course of a year. There's a very informal study done on what it costs the police department to recite and go through this process with a single prostitute. And it was a very staggering price tag when you talk about manpower of an officer writing a ticket, rewriting a ticket many times over. And the Johns, they go to jail. Most of the time they would receive a court date and be cut loose at the time of the crime. Today, with the help of Mary Carol and Councilperson Simpson and Judge Russell and the Hamilton County Sheriff's Department, we have a project that we're working on called Change Court, where we really attack the whole 360-degree problem of prostitution to include the drug addiction, the lack of education, the once very viable source of income in a legitimate sense, and now falling out of that, losing their nursing license and restoring all those things. So with that, now the preferred method is to go ahead and bring them down to the Justice Center and put the prostitute or the victim in front of people that can help. Start with pretrial services and interview. Where are you living? Who is your support system? And really working on all that together to make a model for this person to be what they want to be. And it starts with getting them in front of someone that can help. And that's our justice system. And that's currently the way we're operating. Will that look different in a couple years? It may. But we're always looking to try to make it better and look at the best practices. Many days ago, when I first came on the police department in the 90s, the way to fix a problem was you arrested your way out of that. We now know that we can't do that. We have to get to the root of the problem and fix the people if we're going to fix the problem.
Is there a typical patron, a typical John, Nate? Does class or income really matter in this?
Absolutely makes no difference whatsoever.
No, I would totally agree with that. Part of our program with Off the Streets is that we run a men's education program for men who are arrested for solicitation. And we have been doing this now for 10 years. And if there is any inconsistency in who attends, it is absolutely every walk of life, from doctors, lawyers, construction workers, salespeople, you name the profession that a man might be involved in, and I will tell you that in our 10-year history, we have had somebody like that attend the men's education program.
Absolutely. And you might remember there are these major events, and we did a major intervention around All-Star Game, great all-in, because we knew that at big events, you have visitors that are coming from outside. And you may remember at the Super Bowl, there were prominent football players, we've had former police officers, and others who have been arrested as part of those sting operations. So it really does run the gamut of men who are purchasing sex.
Yvette, from the city standpoint, from a legislative standpoint, what are some of the things that have been done so far to address this?
Well, so we started on this about 3 years ago, kind of jumping right in response to the outcry of the individuals in McMicken, really wanting to be a part of the solution. And so we did a couple things. We increased fines for individuals using a vehicle in solicitation of sex, and that was the one place where the city actually has responsibility for that. We created a fund so those fines go specifically into that fund to be able to help with some of the efforts that are happening. That was key. We also helped to facilitate the creation of the change court in conjunction with
Absolutely.
The Hamilton County Court. And that was something that we didn't realize was even possible at the time. We saw a model of it. And at the time, Heather Russell was also interested in it, who was the judge over change court. And we began to do that work as well. We've got some other interventions and other work that we're doing that's not specifically policy related, like our town halls that we've been doing, our interventions like what we did at McMicken with the multifaceted, most people remember the barricades, but that was a multifaceted approach. And we're going to be doing two of those in Roselawn, Carthage and in Price Hill this spring. So where we bring all resources to the table. So we've got Keep Cincinnati Beautiful doing some vacancy and cleanup work in the area. We've got our DOTE assessing routes and how traffic is flowing and looking at redirecting traffic in certain areas. We've also got our police department doing major interventions in that area. Our office is reaching out to business owners and stakeholders saying, we want you to be more alert. We're going to bring in lighting. We're going to bring in new interventions. So that work happened in McMicken and was a really big part, I think, about of shifting what happened in McMicken, and we're going to try it again in two other communities here this spring.
Nate, that was the barricades are part of People Against Trafficking Humans, right? That
Correct.
Was part of that whole project.
Yes.
How effective was that? How well did that work when that was tried?
Boy, I answer that with bated breath only because I don't want to curse ourselves.
That's
However,
true.
Knock on wood.
I thought it was an extremely successful operation. So McMicken was when we approached the Department of Transportation and the city, and we talked to them about closing down McMicken. They kind of laughed and said, that's a major thoroughfare. And I didn't view it that way coming from a law enforcement perspective. Central Parkway was the major thoroughfare from a law enforcement perspective. But they said that was traveled a lot. So we had to sit down and do a lot of talking and a lot of convincing about these barricades. And The one noteworthy thing that I'll say was the traffic on McMicken post-barricade has never reestablished itself like it was prior to the barricades. And that's, I'm just talking about normal traffic, not necessarily just John traffic, but just normal traffic. So, you know, I think there was a profound effect on how McMicken was used after the barricades were lifted. And that's a good thing. As far as it relates to John traffic, it's a lot easier to see them now because a lot of times they're the only ones out there on McMicken. It's just not, the high volume doesn't exist anymore. So it makes our job a little bit easier. So we like to do a lot of reconnaissance and take down license plates and make notes of who's doing what and where. We're not always out there actively pulling someone over with a finger in their face and accusing them of being a John and trolling for prostitution. But we certainly take a lot of notes and make sure that we believe we know who are the main offenders and who are the people that like to frequent that area a lot.
And Mark, I would just like to add that when you mentioned the West McMicken, it's interesting to me that 3 to 4 years ago that Yvette was referring to, we all showed up at a community meeting in West McMicken. The police were there. Yvette was there. I was there. And along with a lot of community members who were very concerned about the activity of prostitution.
Absolutely.
And I think that, again, modeling what we have here today, all facets, and we could have 20 more people in this room, mm-hmm. as Yvette and Nate and I were talking before the show, the sheriff's department, all of the treatment programs, the social service providers, the faith community, are all really wanting to wrap their arms around solutions. And here we sit 3.5 years later with some very viable approaches that have been multifaceted but could never happen with one entity looking at it only through their eyes and really sitting with that community council and listening to what their concerns were. And I went away from that meeting and subsequent meetings with them with just, I was so impressed with their concern for the women who they also viewed as victims and wanting to make sure that there were going to be services for the women, and yet they wanted the activity to stop as well. So I think you have in front of you a true model of community engagement, and you reach out to the people. Like, city council can do things that private citizens can't do. The police can do things that we can't do. And we can do some things that, that they want us to do to be part of that whole package.
It really is. I think, you know, as we look, we did our walkthroughs of Rose on Carthage and Price Hill to kind of get a full assessment. We had a whole team go out. And I think at the outset, you got to start with a community that's really kind of, they kind of get it. And I think we've got several communities in the city of Cincinnati where this is deeply impacting them. We've got within the region, we've got several communities. But you've got to start with the same attitude that McMicken came to the table with, which is, this is a major problem. It affects my quality of life, but I also understand there's a victim here. And so in each of those communities, which is why we do a town hall there first to help kind of prepare the community for what's going to happen and the way they should be considering this problem. If you have that, then you bring these other things to the table. I think Nate was talking very intelligently about the conditions that create an environment. People say, why on this street? Why on this part of the street? There's all of these ingredients that come together and create this perfect area where this happens. And a block down the street, it's not happening. And our ability to bring all the people to the table to say, how do we combat it right here? How do we look at the fact that there's a vacant building here that things are happening in, and right next door, there's a business that's willing to facilitate some activity. Right next door to that, you may have a lot of bushes or areas where people can hide. You might across the street have an area where there's some folks who could stay for the night, you know, and those conditions, and you have a high traffic area where people can get in and out. Those create a condition that if we deal with it from a multifaceted approach, we can begin to change, as we call, redirect or change the behavior, because Johns like comfort. They like the idea that I can come in and get on a routine, pick a woman up and keep going. When you start to change that pattern, they get off their game. They either don't come back or they get in a situation like on McMicken where we can make an arrest.
So making them uncomfortable is the
very
key here.
Uncomfortable. And that's why these thoroughfares that we're talking about, McMicken was an interesting area because it had this like this circle that you can go in, you know, pick up a woman, go off to some corner, and then come back around. We see similar patterns in the other areas where this is happening. And if we can just cause a little bit of a wrinkle, then it makes it very difficult for them.
Yeah, anonymity is probably the number one sought-after commodity by a John.
Yeah.
Being able to get in and get out, and the risk of obviously being caught and charged with a crime is a deterrent, but anonymity is the number one element, I think, that a John looks for.
Okay. We will continue our conversation about reducing sex trafficking in Cincinnati. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Joining us to discuss efforts to reduce prostitution in Cincinnati are Council Member Yvette Simpson, Cincinnati Union Bethel Executive Vice President and Off the Streets Program Director Mary Carol Melton, and Cincinnati Police Specialist Nate Young. You can call us with your questions and comments, 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Nate, when you do one of these sting operations, does typically the activity move elsewhere, or does this actually help reduce it? It doesn't move, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, again, it's that arrest our way out of the problem approach that the law enforcement, not just Cincinnati, but law enforcement in general, had always taken when they were faced with a problem. So it has a very temporary effect on the activity, maybe, you know, once we get going to a couple hours afterwards. But you'll see the John trolling pick up, you know, a couple hours after we're done. We'll take some time and sit in the area after we're done with an operation and watch. And the trolling picks up within a couple hours. It kind of resumes its normal activity.
Are the officers given any special training in how to deal with the women who are engaged in prostitution, to maybe direct them to where they can go for help if they need it?
Well, you know, yes is the answer to that, but we're going to get better at it is the answer I'm going to give you. Cincinnati Police Department, the city of Cincinnati, is going to get better at that. As a department, we're going to seek some more training, and we have in-service 2 times a year, and we're going to talk my hope, and I think the police department's efforts are going to educate the Mass Police Department about how to point the young men and women in the direction where they can get some help and try to get them out of this tragic cycle that they're in.
I will say that, you know, I think Nate is being a little modest. We have a couple officers who are just really, really good at this. And Nate Young is one of them. Katie Warner is another who's amazing at this. Lisa Johnson. They have amazing compassion and the ability to build trust relationship with these women. And it's that relationship of trust that allows them to feel safe enough. And it really is at the base of it, as we talk to more and more women about feeling safe enough to be able to escape this life. And if they believe that they're going to be rescued is the wrong idea, because these women are taking a major step of independence on their own. But to get these women into a place where they can be safe and get better, we have a few officers I think are just remarkable. And I think to Nate's point, how do we then make sure that all of our officers are trained at least with an awareness and maybe with a sensitivity that when they encounter this, they'll be able to help some of these women out of the situation that they're in?
I would agree with that. And I think from my perspective, even from the beginning of the plannings for the Off the Streets program, the police department was just such a critical partner for us, because you all do engage with the women and you know who they are. And you are sort of that, your whole department is the front line of letting the women know that help is available. And we have done so many things in partnership with the police department. We have held coffees in areas of downtown where literally the officers on bicycles would go into the community and tell the women that if you come to this location, there are going to be people there that you can talk to and that who are going to be able to offer services for you. Nobody was arrested at that point. It was an informational session. We have also had locations where we've had a number of service providers gathered for a day where the officers that Yvette just talked about, Lisa Johnson and Nate and Katie and others, Mandy I can think Mandy. Of, and also Angie Vance, that will really help women get to the location where the services are available. Because I think, as Nate said, we know we're never going to arrest our way out of the problem. And that's that continued cycle of the recidivism is not what anybody wants. So we rely heavily on our partnership with the police department and are always willing to come and talk to any of the officers. We've been to, you know, your call-in sessions and things, just so that the new officers really do know about the services.
Yeah, we're seeing a shift in attitudes in the legal system and service agencies. But does the general public, has its attitude changed towards prostitution?
I think it has. I mean, I think that, of course, you know, we're sitting from the standpoint that we've been working on this for so many years. But when I talk to people, I hear people changing their language. I hear people talking about the victims and the survivors of prostitution. I don't hear that shame and blame about the women who find themselves in such unfortunate circumstances. I certainly think that that the rise in the heroin epidemic, which has just turned everything on its ear for everyone, but it is truly impacting the population of women that we're talking about today. And I think the community in as a whole really is getting an increased awareness of the level of the problem. And, you know, when we have a graduation from off the streets, last time we had over 100 people attend who were in the community who just wanted to be there to support the women.
I think the more we talk about it, the more awareness we raise about how this actually happens, I think the better it gets. I still think that there is a kind of a gap in folks' understanding about it, the relationship part of it. I think people think, well, she's on drugs. She's using this as a service to get her drugs. There's a control aspect and there's a relationship aspect between a woman and her trafficker that really helps facilitate this, that we need to talk more about. And I think that's where once we get to that place, then people will better understand, you know, why it's difficult, why a woman might or a man. Why a woman or a man or a child might get into this situation and why it might be difficult to get out. And so I think we still have a long way to go to help educate individuals on that relationship, because I do believe as the heroin epidemic continues to increase, when people see it, they'll say, oh, she's just on drugs and this is the way for her to. A lot of times that's not the case. The drug is actually the way to facilitate control. And so, you know, also letting people know that there are children who are impacted by this, that there are children of individuals who have been trafficked, who are trafficked. There are children who are exposed to this life because there are women who have been trafficked. And that exposure creates an interesting situation of victim that we need our community to better understand.
Yeah. So many of our women we know were trafficked as young girls. Mm-hmm. This is a pattern in their life that somebody else started for them. And as Yvette talks about the control factor, they've been under somebody else's control.
Getting back to the men's education class, how effective has that been at?
You know, we
things.
Do. It's a very short term. I mean, our women's program goes on for months, and we have one day that the men attend. They have to pay a fine. That fine helps to support the services for the women. We do a pre and post test, and what we are looking at is, did they learn anything, or has there been a shift in understanding? And from everything that we've gathered all these years, there does seem to be an impact in that. And we have followed arrest rates, and there is very little rearrest. But I say that with caution because I know how hard it is for the police to have to set up a sting operation in order for men to be arrested. So I would say it's impactful in that one of the ending sessions is women who have been victims themselves addressing the men in the class and the visible impact that has on the men doesn't get lost on the people there. The police help us with our men's education program. And we're just trying to say, this is not a good activity. You should not be engaged in it. And here are the risks and the harms to you from a legal perspective, a health perspective, a community perspective, your family's perspective. And you really ought to be giving this some really deep thought if you are going to continue to engage.
Nate, you worked in these classes. Are you surprised at how many of these men don't realize what this entails?
Well, it's interesting. I have a story that I like to relay to the gentlemen that are in the class, and I'll just make it I'll shorten it up as much as I can. But a gentleman picks up a prostitute in the car with him, and a police officer just pulls behind him. He's on the computer punching away on the keyboard, and everybody knows they're getting their plate run. So the prostitute's buckling up. Everybody makes sure everything's in place, and she takes her needle that she's using to inject heroin into her body with and tucks it between the door and the seat of the vehicle. That way, if they do get pulled over, it's not on her. She's not getting arrested for it. The person who's driving the car is most likely going to get arrested for that needle. She forgets about it. They go and do in the dirt. The gentleman's daughter calls and asks, can you pick up the grandkids from kindergarten for me? And this afternoon, I'm running late from work. I'm not going to be able to do it. Absolutely, Grandpa's going to do that. Picks them up on the way home. He says, let's stop by UDF. I'll get the sprinkles, the ice cream, the cones you love, the chocolate topping. The kids are, yay, thanks, Grandpa. And then he says, like we've all done, we shouldn't. Stay right here in the car and we run in and get it. It's very difficult to unbuckle you, get it all right again. So just stay here. Grandpa leaves. The car turns into romper room. The kids are looking for the Brock's candy underneath the grandma's seat, looking for their spare change. And the granddaughter got stuck with the needle.
Oh, no.
And Grandpa returns to the vehicle to find the granddaughter hysterical with a needle sticking out of her hand. And explain that as a grandparent to your daughter about what happened to her daughter, your granddaughter, and the months and the years of testing and guilt that goes along with an event like that taking place. So there's always the risk beyond the things that we know and that are in our face, such as venereal diseases and STDs and other things. But there's these other hidden things that we don't think about when we engage in conduct like that and the things that could happen and how it would affect someone other than just you.
Yvette, what are some of the other things you're looking at from a legislative standpoint?
So we've been playing with a few things. I think we've got a new prosecutor. So and our prosecutor came from Columbus, where this in Franklin County they have a much more robust system. Their court is catch court. And so we model a little. So we had introduced some stuff early on that we think we're going to look at a little bit more closely, like spousal notification in the event of a positive venereal test result, vehicle notification in the event that someone's using someone else's car and then that car is seized, and notifying the owner of the vehicle. Publishing of names is something we wouldn't do formally, but it's something we've been approached about in Dayton, which is going to, we brought Dayton down. DPD came in and met with our CPD to talk about some of the efforts that they're doing. They've been very out there about posting of names. That's something that will continue to circulate through our city system to see if we want to do that. There's a lot of side effects that come with that, with the publishing of the names, and it would only be at arrest or conviction, which are make them public records. So those are things that will continue to circulate around. We've got one thing in the queue right now. When we do our work out in the community, we realize, and I think Nate talked about this, that there are places, public places, behind buildings in areas where this activity happens, and it makes it difficult sometimes to make an arrest. So we're looking at some legislation that would make it easier for us to be able to make an arrest in the event that a public place is being used for trafficking, a park, a wooded area. And so we're working on the language now. We hope to have something introduced, which will give our police department another tool to be able to go after individuals who are, I mean, we've been in these places. There's mattresses in wooded areas, in storage areas, in behind people's homes. And so we're working on some legislation that wouldn't be so limiting that it would restrict activity that we don't want to, but that would be broad enough to be able to make an arrest in the event someone was caught in the act of that activity in public, in a public place.
Yvette, Nate, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Cincinnati Councilmember Yvette Simpson and Cincinnati Police Specialist Nate Young. Mary Carol Melton will be with us again in the next segment as we take an in-depth look at the Off the Streets program. And you can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.